Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Listeners, welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast. You've got Mark here. Thank you so much for joining me. We have a great interview with Martin Smith. He is one of the founders, directors of a company called Talent Drive, which is a procurement recruiting company based out of the UK. And I've been fascinated with how the market in the procurement space is changing. We had Mark Holyoke on, as you know, to talk about how the market in North America, US, has been changing for procurement people. I wanted to have the perspective of someone from across the pond as well to see sort of what they think. And it's interesting to chat with someone like this because they're viewing us from the outside in. Like, they don't do what we do, but they work with us on a daily basis. So they can see a lot of our weaknesses. They can see a lot of our flaws without actually being one of us. It's a really good objective viewpoint. Like, if you're thinking right now, hey, what can I do to improve on my candidacy or my relevancy, my attractiveness in the marketplace? I recommend that you start following guys like Mark Holyoke, Martin Smith, these high-level, top-tier procurement recruiters, and start following their content because they give away some unreal tips on how to make sure you're staying relevant in the market and competing and still looking attractive to employers. I think you're going to love this discussion. Enjoy it. Thanks so much for listening. Martin Smith, we made it. Welcome to the show, man.
Hey, nice to be on, Mark. How are you?
I'm well, buddy. I'm very, very well indeed. Thank you so much for being on today.
A pleasure. Good to be on.
Yeah, I'm excited because I want to get your input on how things are changing in the UK and Europe. You know, we're predominantly North American focused. And so occasionally we lose track of our brothers and sisters across the pond. And we want to find out how you guys are doing in all this mess. But before we get started, maybe you could tell the listeners a bit about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, sure. No problem. So I set up Talent Drive last May. So I'm a specialist procurement and supply chain recruiter here in the UK. Talent Drive was set up last May. So we've been trading now for coming up to 18 months. But I've been working in procurement and supply chain recruitment for 12 years this month. So yeah, we're very much seeing lots of changes in terms of, you know, the employment market in procurement, which I'm sure we'll come on to. And yeah, living and breathing, talking to people like you, both across in the States and across Europe and the UK.
Amazing, man. And congratulations on the podcast, by the way. It's doing very well.
Yeah. It's the Talent Talks podcast. Yeah. Well, like you, it was just a chance to talk to some great people and raise the profile of procurement. I think sometimes, you know, self-promotion isn't something that procurement people are particularly good at times. So it's a good chance for people to tell about their journeys and how they've challenges, I guess, they're facing at the moment in procurement. And also, you know, the successes and celebrating those successes.
Why do you suppose that is? Why do you suppose procurement people aren't good at talking about themselves like that?
I think they're just used to being kind of a phrase over here, I don't use it there, but kind of in the weeds with it, you know, and just focusing on day job and delivering those contracts and delivering that service to the businesses. And I think they're not particularly good about sort of networking. And actually, I know you're a part of the procurement foundry, but something I was talking to Michael about on a podcast recently around networking and actually really getting yourself out there, which I think over in the States and North America, I think you guys are better at generally than the UK. So it's getting there, but the podcast is a chance to talk about themselves for once rather than just what the procurement agenda is.
Yeah, I love it. And I think you're doing a fantastic job, man. Kudos. For the listeners, just so that you know, Martin has a fantastic podcast. We'll link out to it in the show notes. I highly recommend that you go check it out. Martin, the way that I wanted to start this conversation was talking about how the market's changed potentially in the UK for employment, for procurement people. I had a conversation with Mark Holyoke the other day, who does a lot of recruitment in the US. He was telling me that by and large, it hasn't actually changed all that much for procurement people. They still seem to be, at least on the surface right now, still employed to a large extent, which a lot of professions can't really speak to. There's been a lot of attrition across a lot of different professions. So what's it like in the UK right now?
I think procurement have certainly sort of felt the effects like every industry, but I agree with what he said about, you know, procurement has been slightly less affected than other industries like take hospitality and aviation and those sort of industries. So procurement are at the forefront of businesses at the moment. And actually, they're really sort of, we hear a lot about people taking a seat at the table. And I think procurement have really raised their profile in businesses, which is great. It's great for me and you, right? And the whole industry as a whole. There are still people that unfortunately lost jobs. I think what we've seen in the UK procurement employment market, it's that sort of middle manager level, which has been affected the most.
Yeah,
I would describe those at sort of more buyer level, and then those at sort of CPO and procurement director, they're staying put, right? You know, they're people that have just left university and they're on their first procurement job. They don't want to move. And similarly, you know, procurement directors on big six-figure salaries, again, at the moment with the market the way it is, they don't want to move either. But where we've seen the churn is in that sort of middle management for people that are taking ownership of a set category. And for those guys, there's still a little bit of movement in the market. And unfortunately, in certain sectors in procurement still, they have been affected, but it's certainly not been impacted anywhere near as much as other industries, which is good.
Yeah, I mean, that's because we're driving a lot of value during this time, I would assume.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I was saying to someone the other day on my podcast, you know, if procurement can't be at the forefront right now, when can they be? You know, they're looking at the forefront of negotiation, which is very much what your podcast is geared around. They're at the forefront of supplier risk management. They're at the forefront of compliance and governance. It's every spectrum of business that procurement are being involved in the moment. So it's great. And I would argue that from a recruitment perspective, they should be investing even more in headcount, in resource, in, you know, and in training and upskilling the team and the profession at the moment.
You know, it's a fantastic time to pick up some cheap labor. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. And people are happy to do that, right? There's procurement people that are sat on the bench over here that are happy to do some pro bono work or fixed term work or, you know, a few weeks here and there on projects because they want to stay active and they want to stay in the market and stay relevant. And I think that's really important right now. And what I'm actively encouraging people that are actively looking in procurement to sort of be doing.
So, I mean, you've got a unique insight into how people should be looking for potentially advancement or raises during this time. And I would assume that because we're in the situation we're in, the leverage has changed quite a lot. And so the employer now has a fairly decent amount of leverage on what they can do and what they can't do. Does that change how you would advise maybe the procurement person to approach an increase or a position change or something like that?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question. I think if you'd asked me pre-COVID, I would say we're in very much a candidate-led market where there's a lot of sort of positive leverage, you know, can go out into the market from a candidate point of view and kind of within reason, they can kind of leverage and command high salaries. But I think because we are now in very much kind of a buyer's market or a client market, what we're seeing now is more kind of negative leverage, you know, that almost that threat-based leverage that's happening in the recruitment industry. And that's our biggest challenge. And one of our biggest challenges, we're seeing clients lowballing in offers and salaries for people that are probably worth, you know, $80,000, $90,000 or pounds or whatever. And they're offering $20,000, $30,000 less because they know that there's not as many roles in the market. And that's our biggest challenge as recruiters. It's not sustainable long term, but unfortunately for the current economic climate and employment market, they can kind of do that. So I think there's been a real shift between that positive to negative leverage.
Is it a situation where they're offering these lowball offers and missing out on top talent because top talent's willing to wait it out?
Yeah, to a degree. I mean, unfortunately, some of that top talent is saying yes, and they're going in. So again, in the short term, that might be a quick fix. But when the market does pick up, they're going to be out the door, right? They're on, you know, they've gone in on a negative sentiment to start with on a low offer, not feeling valued. That can kind of work in the economy right now, because there's not as many jobs. But that's not a long term thing, I don't believe. And again, I think businesses need to be thinking about the investment and actually really valuing procurement. And surely if someone's wanting that kind of salary, 9 times out of 10, they're probably worth it. And they should be showing that through the process.
Yeah. So when they go into those types of conversations, let's say they've been identified, they're top two, top three, they're going into the salary discussion now to be hired. What's the best way for a candidate to approach that discussion right now in this market, knowing that they probably don't have as much leverage, but let's just say they're confident in their skill set, their education, their ability. How do they approach that?
Stick to your price point. Stick to what you're valued. Hold your own. It's like a negotiation, right? You know, you've got to hold your number where you can. You know, there are a few factors that I say to candidates about it. So if the company are a fast growth business, if the hiring manager they've particularly connected with, the business off home working, et cetera, you know, if there's obvious things like that, which are real added value away from the salary piece, then there's obviously a natural compromise. But I'd always say to anyone that's entering an interview process, let's talk pre getting offered a job, right? When they're entering the interview process, they should be having that kind of bottom line number in their head. I always say to them, go in on what you feel you're valued at. Have your bottom line, which you don't share with anyone but me. You go into that process and you stick to your number. Now, if we get to an offer stage and they do lowball it, if it's below the number, you know, it's a very personal decision. But for me, stick to your value, because if you lower your value even more, as I say, you're joining the job on the back foot and you're joining the organization not feeling valued. So as I say, my advice would be stick to the number that you feel you're valued at. Flex it, have a bottom number and a minimum number, but go in what you feel you'll do. Because the economy will pick up, right? This isn't forever. COVID's not going to be around forever. We're adapting to it at the moment. We're adapting to a really tough economy, whether you're in procurement or any other profession, but it will recover. And those people, you know, as hard as it is right now, they've got to hold it out a little bit to get the right role.
Do you see employers doing a bit of like geo arbitrage as well, like picking up? Because you're in the UK, so you're directly in line with, I guess, South Africa. And so you could pick up some cheap labor in South Africa if you were an employer. Language is the same, right? Education is similar. And everyone's working from home anyway. Could you pick up cheaper labor in another location right now?
Yeah, I mean, why not? Any English speaking country, you know, one of the positives to come out of all of this, as you said then, is flexible working. You know, I'm sat to you today having a podcast in the south of England and you're in North America. We're having the same sort of conversations and can have the same amount of detail as sometimes maybe even sitting face to face. So I think people can certainly do procurement jobs, whether they're doing it virtually or in the same building. And I think that's one of the beauties that everyone's embraced the technology that's been available to us. They've had to. So yeah, why not? Someone that's based in England could be doing a job over in South Africa. They could be doing a job in Switzerland. In a lot of countries, English is their second language at least, and a lot of them are very fluent in it. So I think procurement people need to be creative at the moment. They need to be looking outside the boxes of, I'm a category manager, you know, this is my salary range, this is where I'm based. The market's moved. The change in landscape is that businesses are going to have to be mobile. They're going to have to be flexible and flexible in approach, and candidates need to replicate that. So yeah, I absolutely see that happening.
Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about another company that I run called Content Callout. It is a thought leadership brand marketing company. Now, what does that mean? It means that we take you as an executive or entrepreneur, a leader of a small or medium-sized business, and we turn you into a thought leader online. We take your personal brand and we amp it up to 11. So that you can lead with confidence, knowing that people will recognize you, recognize your brand, and recognize your business because of the thought leadership approach that you've taken on social media through content creation and content distribution, as well as engaging with all of your following online. How do you get involved in this? Easy, easy, easy. Just go to contentcallout.com/get-started, and you will see there three different options that will allow you to take your thought leadership brand for yourself and for your business to the next level. We are super excited to talk to you about this. We've seen some massive growth with the businesses that we've been working with. Very, very exciting time for us. Look at that. We appreciate it. Now back to your show. I mean, the downside to what's been happening is certainly the geographic market that you're in, that you live in, potentially has shrunk, but the overall opportunities geographically have actually increased because now everyone's accepting work from home as an option. And so you could really work anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is fantastic. Absolutely. I mean, you could have someone in the UK working for a Swiss company or someone in the US working for a company in Singapore. It doesn't necessarily matter where you are right now, which I think has been one of the great silver linings of what's happened in today's COVID nightmare.
I totally agree. And it's challenged and changed the thinking of businesses and how they do it. You know, again, when I started in the industry 12 years ago, people that were based in London would work in London, and people that were based in Switzerland, Germany, the States, wherever, would remain there. And then they'd often outsource for cheap labor in other countries. But I think while that there is still a little bit of that, I think we've come in with globalization. Procurement now is a truly global workforce. And I think with COVID, I agree, it's the silver lining. That's only reinforced that.
When I was going to talk with you today, I was thinking about how the interview process is like a negotiation and how it's dissimilar to a negotiation. And so I thought I'd pose the question to you. In an interview, how do you see it being similar? I suppose they're both communication-based exchanges, but how is an interview like a negotiation?
I was having a think about that before we came on. And I guess traditionally I would have said the interview's at negotiation when you're at the end of it and you're negotiating the offer. But actually, I think it's the trade-off from the start. You know, actually, when someone goes into an interview, they're already trading, you know, they're already exchanging and selling themselves and negotiating back the pluses. You know, when you go into an interview, what does a procurement hiring manager want to know? They want to know the supplier knowledge that you have. They want to know how flexible you could be, how you approach stakeholders, how you communicate yourself, how you like to manage teams. These are all trading variables when you're negotiating, when you're looking at a job and why the job should be for you. And these are almost the ammunition for the candidates to come back when they do get to the offer stage to say, hey, look, you're going to get all of this supplier knowledge that I have, all of this leadership experience I have, all of this direct industry experience maybe, or understanding of the compliance that may be involved in that company or whatever. You know, Joe Bloggs over here that works in that business, which would give me a strong reference. So you're almost building up all of that stuff through the interview process to trade off the negotiation. So negotiation doesn't start at the end. It starts right at the beginning when you shake their hands, or at the moment, elbow pump, or say hello on Zoom or whatever, and have the first hello and the first dialogue. That's when the interview and that's when the negotiation starts.
And a lot of that comes down to creating a good first impression.
There's lots of different studies and research, which I'm sure you're familiar with as well, that's in the first 30 seconds of engagement that people will typically be saying yes or no. And I guess that's the same with buying decisions that procurement people make. The first 30 seconds is massive. You know, it's the biggest impression you can have on someone. And again, that's going to dictate the start of a negotiation. And the same when you're negotiating with a supplier, right? It's the same sort of principle. First 30 seconds of interaction is going to be, because at the end of the day, for me in recruitment, it's kind of simple. If you like someone and you're engaged with them, that's kind of half the battle. You can have a procurement person with the right technical experience, the right know-how, the right supplier knowledge, but if they're not likable and don't culturally fit in your business, then for me, it's not going to work. You know, it's not going to work as a recruit, you know, the employment process, and similarly with negotiation with a supplier. For me, if I don't like a supplier, doesn't matter how good whatever they're selling to me is, I don't want to work with them. And that's just my approach. That's just the way I am, but that's a real benefit.
I find this is so true. And I love the comparison between this and negotiation, because I find in negotiation, it's much the same, or sales, it's much the same. I mean, you do business with someone you like and trust, right? And the only way to create that likability is to first, well, probably not the only way, but the easiest way to create that likability is to have a great first impression. And I think so many people don't put enough effort into creating a great first impression because they believe it's just another step in the process, when in fact, it could be the most important step in the process. And when I advise people on, you know, what they should be doing to create the good first impression, and this is unusual for a lot of procurement people, but a lot of procurement people aren't really great at smiling.
That's what I mean. It's selling themselves. It's smiling. It's self-promotion. They're not good at it.
Right. They're quite cold. They're very analytical. And I think because they're very process-driven culturally, they might come across as quite cold in the interaction. And so the biggest piece of advice that I give to procurement people is just smile, right? Smile. That's the first thing that you should do, and say hello.
Yeah. No, you're right. And it's the same, you know, if I use it from my own industry, and obviously I'm looking at this slightly different to some of your guests that come from the procurement world. I'm a recruiter in the procurement world. So I don't proclaim to be one of you, but I'm kind of working around you every day. And I love it. I'm very passionate about the industry, but it's the same in recruitment. My best clients, the best businesses that I work with, why do they work with me? It's because they like me, I think. And it's about nurturing and building a relationship. I always say to anyone that I ever work with as a recruiter in my team, the barometer success isn't necessarily the fee, isn't necessarily the recruit that you're bringing into the business. I mean, that's why we do our job, right, in recruitment, but it's actually them using you again when they need it. It's the repeat business. It's the, you know what, Martin, you didn't place me there, but I love the process. You were great with me and I want to give you this job, or I want to use you to help me get my next role. And that's the biggest barometer. And it's the same with a supplier. You know, if you're getting repeat business from a supplier, you're doing the right thing. And there's so much added competition now in terms of different software tools and businesses, and the same with recruitment. There's so many people out there to do it. They're going to pick the people they want to work with and they want to engage with, because crudely speaking, our costs are similar. I don't cost you dissimilar to another recruiter out there, but it's the value add that they feel from building that relationship with them. And I'm sure it's the same with you, with your customers and clients.
Yeah, very much so. The comparisons between the UK and the US, especially in terms of the procurement professional, there's so much, but there's a few different things that I've noticed between the UK procurement professional and the US procurement professional. And one of them is the focus on tertiary education. I find that the UK procurement professional is very much focused on tertiary education, designations, all that other kind of stuff. Where do you see some of the biggest differences between those two markets?
In terms of the US and the UK markets, do you mean, Mark?
Yeah. The candidate. If you were going to compare the average candidate, where do you think they differ and where are they similar?
Yeah, good question. So I think in terms of the differences, I think I find, and it's got better, but I think with UK procurement people, they're still quite linear in the way a lot of people sort of think. So for example, if a procurement person in the UK has worked in the pharmaceutical sector, for example, for 10 years, when they first approach me, they'll want to talk to me just about roles in the pharmaceutical sector. Well, actually, as you well know, that category experience, that technical experience can be applied in any industry. So in the interactions I've had with people in the US, I think they're a lot more open-minded, I would say, from the industry that they would go into. There's a lot more kind of SMEs, startups, fintechs from the e-commerce world, that sort of thing, that are growing and investing in procurement now over in the US, which I think we could do better over here in the UK. I think there needs to be more investment. And I think a lot of procurement people over here are used to just going to some of the, you know, in inverted commas, the big corporates that have a large churn of procurement people. This is a generalization, obviously, this isn't all, but some that I've interacted with. And again, I think in the US, there's probably a little bit more entrepreneurial spirit in terms of looking at creating their own thing or looking to do more sort of consultancy work with multiple clients rather than just doing that sort of, as we say over here, the 9-to-5 job, as Dolly Parton says as well. You know, it's not just the night working 9-to-5, that's not procurement anymore. So I think over here, we need to be a little bit more adaptable to that. So that would be, I'd say, the differences. The similarities are the same in terms of, you know, I want to add value, I want to work in a strategic procurement department, I want to work there investing in it. You know, there's more credit and training and support. That's very similar. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's the US, UK, Europe, it doesn't really make any odds. It's the same. But I would say that would be my biggest differentiator. I don't know if you've seen the same, Mark, but that would be my views.
I definitely see the same. I think the UK, Canada is probably more focused on education. What we're seeing right now in the market here is a rapid move towards implementing, just not necessarily candidate to candidate, but market to market, rapid move towards the implementation of artificial intelligence and machine learning and robotic process automation to automate a lot of stuff. So you've got companies like BitOps and others that are automating a lot of tactical roles and parts of tactical roles to make things a lot more efficient and a lot easier on the organization. Is the same thing happening in the UK right now?
Yeah, the rise in, I mean, you know, at the start, we talk about the changes in the procurement market, and technology and AI is absolutely number one, right? Automation, people moving away from the tactical to the strategic, and IT and tech doing the tactical side of buying is absolutely prevalent over here as well. And there's huge investments in SAP and Oracle and Ariba and Coupa and all those different software systems are automating how we look at spend and automating that sort of front end of the procurement process. Absolutely. That's every single company pretty much that I've worked with are investing in their tech for sure and allowing the procurement people to really focus on what we would define as kind of strategic category management. Yeah, that's definitely something that's happening here as well, for sure.
So then do you have some advice for people who may have a tactically focused procurement career right now? The advice that I've been giving to the people over here is, I mean, you're going to have to move into a more strategic role, or yeah, you're going to have to start learning how to code or learning more about RPA, learning more about AI, because otherwise you're going to be done within a matter of years.
You got to stay relevant. You got to stay relevant. And yeah, absolutely. My advice to every procurement candidate that I work with is read up on your tech, learn tech. Every role, it's not just about IT procurement managers managing software licensing agreements and hardware and peripherals and telecoms or whatever. You know, the HR person is going to have a system where they, you know, the HR procurement manager, I should say, that's looking at agency spend and L&D and training and stuff. That's all tech driven.
Same as marketing. So yeah, all of it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, upskill yourself in the tech, understand the movers and shakers in the technology supplier area. That's really, really important. And yeah, as I say, every role at the moment has a huge amount of tech in it.
Yeah, fantastic. Martin, as we close off, one thing that I always like to ask everyone that comes on the show is, what's the one piece of advice that you'd like to leave the listeners today?
I think the word I always use when I talk to people at the market is be authentic. I think that's so important at the moment in the market, whether you're a candidate, a client, just, you know, a procurement professional across any industry, is be authentic. People will really buy into authentic people at the moment. It's really, really important. What doesn't work and what does work is people that are real and they can genuinely build authentic relationships with people. That's sustainable. That's going to last, COVID or no COVID. That will get people through it. So my advice to people when they're approaching a supplier, when they're approaching a colleague, you know, whatever it may be, a recruiter like me, is be authentic. And that means for me, be yourself, be real, be yourself, and people really buy into that.
Love that. Great advice. Where do people find you online?
So you can check me out on LinkedIn. Obviously, talentdrive.co.uk is the website. Do download the Talent Talks podcast as well, which is on iTunes and Spotify and stuff. So I hope you guys like that. We've had some of your colleagues and friends and peers on there as well in North America, as well as over here in the UK. So yeah, do check it out.
Yeah, it's a fantastic podcast, man. I think you're doing a great job. For the listeners that are listening in right now, just so that you know, we'll link out to all of these resources in the show notes. You can check them out on our website. Martin, thank you so much for being on, man.
Keep at it. And yeah, it's really nice to talk to you.
Thanks, buddy. Have a great day.
Take care. Cheers, Mark.
Hey friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go on to iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.